Thank you, Andy. Happy Sabbath. Mr. Thomas has rightly admonished us to not speak about politics. And I'm not going to. I'm going to speak about another controversial topic, though, which has to do with an alternative religion that some of us follow. And the title of this is called Lessons from the Apple Store. It doesn't seem possible because they seem like a new phenomenon to me, but the first Apple Store opened in the year 2001. And it was widely covered and widely heralded because of its unusual approach. Apple had been plagued with a decade of bad retail experiences where they had to sell their products through other dealers, and they suffered at the hands of others, they felt. When the company decided that it needed to expand into its own retail system, Steve Jobs looked to the outside and hired the best experts he could to help the cause. In 1999, he hired a man named Mickey Drexler, who was CEO of The Gap. And the following year, Ron Johnson, who was a former marketing executive who transformed Target from a Kmart clone into a trendy retail destination for those seeking inexpensive but well-designed housewares, Ron Johnson joined the team. He did his job well, later went on to ruin the JCPenney company, but while he was at Apple, he did just fine. He was confronted with a problem, though, when he wanted to open stores, and the problem was that Steve Jobs had cut the product line down to basically four categories in those days. This was 6 years before the iPhone debuted, and I think that was even before the iPod. In those days, the product lines were the iMac, the iBook, the PowerMac G4, and the PowerBook, four kinds of computers, in other words. And what do you do? You know, if you have a Target store, you have thousands and thousands and thousands of products, but how do you do a store around basically four products? And he realized that Apple should focus on the overall experience of using those products. You could build and organize a music collection. You could edit a digital movie. You could burn a CD. You could do photos. The Mac was not just a tool, but a companion. He referred to this concept as the Apple lifestyle. In most stores, a product purchase marks the end of the relationship with the company and the customer. In the Apple Store, it was designed to be the beginning of the relationship. All Apple Store visitors would be welcome to experiment with Apple hardware and software in the store. You can go in and play with all the toys. And the store would build up a culture around it through free seminars and the Genius Bar, where they dealt with problems that arose in the friendliest way possible. There were no cash registers, which was considered impossible at the time, but as you know, it worked out well. The stores have always had a welcome, exploratory nature. They were wildly successful, to say the least. These figures are from 2012, but in 2012, sales per unit area were $4,032 per square foot. Now, the second most prosperous store that had the second highest figure was Tiffany's in New York, and they had about half of that. So it was more expensive than jewelry. Fortune magazine said that Audrey Hepburn like Tiffany's for breakfast, but Apple is eating everyone's lunch. And in 2011, there was a revenue of $473,000 for each employee, which is higher than some car dealerships. It's phenomenal. $473,000 for each employee, and that turned out to be the key to the allure of the Apple Store. It was the employees who are called geniuses. They undergo extensive, rigorous training. The manuals and the classes have leaked out, of course, and we've had access to them for years, and there are many things, I think, that everyone alive on the earth can learn from these things. They go through quite a boot camp, and the point of the boot camp is to fill you up with, and these are in capital letters, genius actions and characteristics, listed conveniently on a what and how list on page 7 of the manual, if any of you are following along in the manual. What does a genius do? Well, the answer in the manual is educates. How does a genius do this? The manual answers gracefully, which is one reason why I've never applied. He also takes ownership. He deals empathetically with customers. He recommends persuasively. It could be he or she, and he gets to the yes answer respectfully. The basic idea here, besides all the verbiage, is simple. You become strong while appearing compassionate, you persuade while seeming passive, and you empathize your way to a sale. And if you've ever walked into an Apple store and bought an Apple product, that's the way it is. You go in there and you feel like an old guy wearing suspenders, and you go in and they greet you like you're their long-lost best friend, and, well, of course you're interested, and of course, and what, you know, what do you do? What do you use the products for? And you think, I think this person likes me. I think we're going to be friends. And you realize that by the time you leave, that you went in there for an Apple 6 phone and you're left with an Apple X and it costs you $400 more than you thought, but you felt so good the entire time. Well, there's no need to mince words. This is psychological training. Apple's staff is bar none the most helpful and knowledgeable of any large retail or operation, and that's been a key to the success of the retail stores. A fundamental part of their job, they have no sales quotas of any kind, is simply to make you happy. But you're not at a spa, you're at a store, and things are meant to be bought and sold. Your happiness is just a means to the cash register, and the manual reminds trainees of that. Everyone in the Apple store is in the business of selling. That's a quote from the manual, period. It's worked for them. One of the tools that they use is extensive role-playing. They act out customer situations where there's possible objections or hesitations or problems, and they then are it's rather like Spokesman Club. They get evaluated at that point, and they're shown how they could deal with it in a more effective money-making way. Selling is a science, and Apple has actually summed it up with 5 cute letters. Guess what the letters are for the Apple company. A stands for approach. P stands for probe. P stands for present. L stands for listen, and E stands for end, which is a nice way of saying sell. Approach, probe, present, listen, end. In other words, go up to someone and get them to open up to you about their computing desires, about what their insecurities are, about what their needs are. Offer them choices of things to buy. Hear them out, and then seal the deal in a way that makes it feel like the customer has come to this decision on their own. You know, this is an approach that works well in any endeavor of human relations. Make it feel like the other person has come to the decision on their own. I spend a lot of time accompanying singers. That's one of my jobs. And somebody summed up our job as getting the singer to do what you want them to in the nicest possible way. And if we cannot let them know that we're manipulating them, then we're a success. Well, that's kind of the way successful sales also is. You get people to do what you want them to do, but you do it and you make them feel good and that it was their idea. The manual condemns pushiness. And that's a good thing that they condemn that. But it also preaches a form of salesmanship that's actually kind of slightly creepy. Every Apple customer should feel empowered when it's really the genius pulling the strings. In Apple Ease, you know, Apple words, this is put forth in a series of maxims, and these are quotes. We guide every interaction. We strive to inspire. We enrich their lives. We take personal initiative to make it right. And in all four of those things, they're helping people, but they're guiding people too. The Apple geniuses become your friend, and they show you how your life will be better if you make the right choices, which are their choices, and you take the right action. Well, in many ways, this is not that different from what we are trying to do. Now, our goal is different. We want to see God's kingdom established. We want to be part of God's family, and we want to help him build his family till everyone alive is living lives of fulfilled happiness and creativity and love. We're in boot camp now. We are training. In a way, everything we're doing is role-playing. Now, it's very real to us because there are real everyday problems. They're our problems. They're problems that affect our happiness and our pain level and our health and our finances. And any time you hear a Christian living sermon, really, they're dealing with that role-playing, the thing that God has put us on earth to do now. We live by his laws. We learn to live the way God wants us to live, but the goal is not to become perfect law keepers. The goal is that as we do that, we become people of God's character. So the law is just a schoolmaster, and what we want to do through this role-playing and through this life is to become people who have the qualities of God. I don't need to list for you what they are, but the fruit, as I learned within the last few weeks, the fruit of the Spirit is listed in Galatians, as you know. We want to become godly people so that we can help in the culmination of this history in what we call the world tomorrow. And as important as today is, and as vital as it is, and I mean, you know, breathing is important every day of our lives, waking up is important, eating is important, but it's all preparation for that kind of thing. We put what we've learned into effect now, of course. We want to treat people well, and we want to tell people about our way of life. We want it to be known, and we want God's family to grow right now, even before Jesus Christ returns. If you turn to 1 Peter 3:15, a verse that you know, that our manual has drilled into us, because it's a verse that we need to know. 1 Peter 3 and verse 15, Peter writes, "But in your hearts set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have, but do this with gentleness and respect, keeping a clear conscience so that those who speak maliciously against your good behavior in Christ may be ashamed of their slander." In other words, when the customer comes to you, you listen to them, you give an answer, you find out what their concerns are and what the path into their mind is, and you give an answer. We do that right now. In Matthew 5 and verse 16, words from Jesus Christ himself, I find the most challenging part of speaking is turning pages. Matthew 5 and verse 16, where Jesus says, "In the same way, let your light shine before men," and that's right now, "that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven." So that's part of our job right now, is to live God's way and let our light shine and attract people with that light if there's any way to do so. Also, we are to exercise this among our own brothers and sisters in God's family. In Hebrews 10 and verses 23-25, the author of Hebrews writes in Hebrews 10, verse 23, "Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful." In other words, we learn the ways of God. And then in verse 24, "And let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Let us not give up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but let us encourage one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching." So part of our approach, of course, is to use these good techniques in a good way to help our own brothers and sisters in the faith right now, to help us all achieve the same goal. In 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 14, it says, "And we urge you, brothers, warn those who are idle, encourage the timid," and these are talking about people in our congregation, "help the weak, be patient with everyone. Make sure that nobody pays back wrong for wrong, but always try to be kind to each other and to everyone else." So we can build our godly character by doing those things for God's people now. There's a curious verse at the end of the book of James, the brother of Jesus Christ, that I wonder if we take to heart often enough. And it's sort of something that James throws on to the end of his letter as an afterthought, it seems like. I mean, it's just at the very end Oh, please, Paige, please turn, or I'll have to have one of you read it. Don't make me lick my finger. Here, we got it. No, we didn't. We're so close. We're one page away. James, the last verse, last two verses of the book of James. My brothers, if one of you should wander from the truth and someone should bring him back, remember this, whoever turns a sinner from the error of this way will save him from death and cover over a multitude of sins. So there's role-playing, if you will, except it's not role-playing. It's the real thing that we do right now to help people within our own family. In 2 Timothy and chapter 4 and verse 2, it sounds like they're talking about the year 2019 in the United States of America. It's very chilling. 2 Timothy chapter 4. It says in 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 2, preach the word. This is what we need to do. Be prepared in season and out of season. Correct, rebuke, and encourage. And of course, he's talking to a leader in the church at this point with great patience and careful instruction. Great patience and careful instruction sounds like it could be straight out of the Apple Genius Training Manual. For the time will come when men will not put up with sound doctrine. Instead, to suit their own desires, they will gather around them a great number of teachers to say what their itching ears want to hear. They will turn their ears away from the truth and turn aside to myths. And this is so prevalent in a church situation and in just a day-to-day life situation. It's difficult to even talk to people anymore, let alone reason with them. People get into the craziest arguments based on things that aren't even true. But this is dealing with our own family. Well, I sometimes wonder how much we understand about our own role at the return of Christ's return. And of course, we won't understand it fully until Jesus Christ returns and we do experience it. Here's how we're preparing to be ready, to be fully trained representatives of God, to meet the public. And that's in Ephesians in chapter 4. Starting in verse 17. Ephesians 4, verse 17. Paul writes, so I tell you this, and I insist on it in the Lord, that you must no longer live as the Gentiles do. You have to do things differently, because their approach doesn't work, and we want the approach that does work. In the futility of their thinking, they are darkened in their understanding and separated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to the hardening of their hearts. Having lost all sensitivity, they have given themselves over to sensuality so as to indulge in every kind of impurity with a continual lust for more. And these are the people with whom we're going to be dealing as God's representatives. You, however, did not come to know Christ that way, and that's because Jesus did us a favor. In verse 21, surely you heard of him and were taught in him in accordance with the truth that it is in Jesus. You were taught with regard to your former way of life to put off your old self. We've already learned that, which is being corrupted by its deceitful desires. We continually fight those things. Even when we know the right thing to do, we don't always do it. To be made new in the attitude of your minds, and that's our goal, and to put on the new self created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. That's our goal after this life. When we die, we want to be ready for that. Therefore, each of you must put off falsehoods and speak truthfully to his neighbor. And now we're not talking about the family of God, we're talking about the world. For we are all members of one body. In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. Do not give the devil a foothold. He who has been stealing must steal no longer, but must work, doing something useful with his own hands, that he may have something to share with those in need. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths. How hard is that today? Very hard. But only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. Do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, and that's our final answer, with whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. So God's given us that down payment so we can be ready to work on the day of redemption. Get rid of all bitterness, rage and anger, brawling and slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as Christ God forgave you. Be imitators of God, therefore, as dearly loved children, and live a life of love. And that is our boot camp. Well, when Jesus Christ returns, we know from 1 Thessalonians in chapter 4 that we will meet him in the air. That's very clear. We will meet him with the air, we will descend with him, and we will come to earth and help conquer the earth. But if we turn to Revelation 19 and verse 11, we're not the only people coming to earth with Jesus. We're not the only beings coming to earth with Jesus Christ at that point. In Revelation 19, starting in verse 11, John says, I saw heaven standing open, and there before me was a white horse whose rider is called Faithful and True. We know who that is. With justice he judges and makes war. His eyes are like blazing fire, and on his head are many crowns. He has a name written on him that no one knows but he himself. He is dressed in a robe, dipped in blood, and his name is the Word of God. The armies of heaven were following him, riding on white horses and dressed in fine linen, clean, white, and clean. And with these armies of heaven, he conquers the earth. We don't know till it happens. We will have a role in the conquering. We will have a role in the fighting. But think about it. At that point, our main weapon will be the fact that people cannot do anything to us. People will not be able to hurt us in any way. We have nothing to fear. You know, they could aim a gun at us and we would just laugh. And we would say, oh, you know, like that's going to work. When you read about how the armies are conquered, eyes melt, flesh disappears, all kinds of things happen, and it's possible that there will be hand-to-hand combat, but from what we read about the reports, it sounds like that God will have his own supernatural ways of dealing with them, and it won't be us with our karate moves at that point. We will be beyond that. Furthermore, he already has staff to do that. He already has trained staff to conquer the world. We aren't being trained as fighters. You know, they used to call Ambassador College in the days of Worldwide Church of God, God's West Point. Well, as my dad said, he graduated from New York's West Point. He said, great school, we were all trained to kill. I mean, that's the way he summed it up. They also did other things. He used that when he was trying to make a point, of course. But we don't learn the ways of war. We learn the ways of love, as we've already seen. So what will our role be? Well, Jesus has the fighters. We may join in on that part of things, but our main defense, as I said, will be that no one can hurt us. Fighting is not why Jesus needs us at that point. But there are things that we can do, people who have been through boot camp, people who have read the manual and made it a part of themselves, people who have become godly beings, there are things that once human people will be able to do that not even God can do as effectively as we can. And it's not blasphemy to say that. I mean, God's in charge of the process. He's specifically growing a family for that reason, so that we can do what we are trained to do. He can use us to do it for him. And to sum it up, we could go into that for hours and hours and hours, and I would love to, but why? I wouldn't be able to turn all the pages anyway. In Isaiah 61, verses that you know well because Jesus used these verses to describe his own ministry, he talks about the way the world will be after he returns. When he starts in verse 61, he's talking about his own ministry on earth as a man. In Isaiah 61, verse 1, the Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me because the Lord has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. And that was Jesus' now message. But then when he returns, it goes on, and we're part of this too. And the day of vengeance of our God to comfort all who mourn and provide for those who grieve in Zion. Because people will be mourning and people will be grieving at that point. To bestow on them a crown of beauty instead of their reality, which is ashes. The oil of gladness instead of their reality, which is mourning. And a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. When all the world looks like it's time for a spirit of despair, we will tell them why it's not. They, these people who will be helping people. They won't be called apple geniuses. They will be called oaks of righteousness. They will be called a planting of the Lord for the display of his splendor. And the throngs will come to you, just like people lined up in front of the apple stores. But for much more important things, the throngs will come to you. It says in the scriptures that people will take hold of God's people and beg them to explain his way of life and to rule them, because they won't know how to do it at that point. We again know the verses in Isaiah, chapter 30 and verse 21, where these people come to us and we echo words that could also be used in other situations. They come to us, we present what we know, we listen to them, we look into their hearts, and we say to them, as in Isaiah 30 and verse 21, when you turn to the right or to the left, your ears will hear a voice behind you. And this will be the customer experience in those days, saying, this is the way. Walk you therefore in it. We will not only rebuild the earth, we will rebuild people from their hearts on up. We'll be their friends. We'll gain their confidence. They will trust us. We will show them how to live, and we will have the power to back it all up. And there will be happiness and joy and rejoicing and bountiful goodness. They'll see how beautiful the earth and all life will become. Some of these people will even be former Apple Store employees. And they may recognize our methods, but there will be a huge difference when we reach the closing, when we reach the decision time, formerly known as the point of sale. We'll refer to those who say yes. We'll refer them to our founder's words, our own CEO's words, that have been used for people who say yes. Not for everyone, but for people who close the sale, who say that, yes, I want to be part of this. Yes, I want my life to change for the better. Those words are, come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world.